Welcome to Into the Nuance, compassionate, evidence-based pre-med advising. Join us each episode as we unravel the complexities, debunk myths, and explore the many paths to medical school. Whether you're a freshman or a pre-med veteran, we are here to provide informed, realistic, and hopeful advice on your journey. Tune in for interviews with experts, stories of triumph, and useful tips as you continue towards medical school. This is Into the Nuance, and we are so glad you're here. Welcome back to Into the Nuance, where we talk about all things pre-med and getting you ready to enter medical school. I'm joined by Joanne Snapp of Mionis Advisor and Doug McLemore of ICOSA Prep. And today we're going to talk all about best practices about being a pre-med on the internet. So on the forums, on Reddit, on SDN, when you're searching for information, there's a lot of great information out there and a ton of misinformation. So today we're going to talk about both how to find good information, how to check for information that may not be accurate, and what's appropriate and not appropriate to post on your end. So Joanne, let's start by talking about some of the things we've seen on those forums that maybe are not the most accurate.
Yeah, I think there's a reason why when you're talking to most advisors and you mention SDN or Reddit, like for some reason, we're all triggered. You're going to hear people go, oh my God, like just stay off of them. Don't do it. And I think that's a very reactive way of just knowing how harmful some of these spaces can be, but yet dismissing all the good that probably is there too. I think it's really funny how I have to check myself when someone says like, oh, I went on Reddit. And I'm like, you know, so why is that? Why do we feel that way? I know, you know, my thing stems way back from when I, again, worked in admissions and we used to stalk SDN every day. I was on SDN every single day checking to see what people would say about the schools that I worked at. I worked at two different medical schools, and seeing how misinformation was posted about the schools that I worked at. I think I might've talked about this in a different podcast, how, you know, I was the admissions lady at one of the schools, and they would quote me and they would misquote me and they'd say, the admissions lady said blah, blah, blah. And I hadn't said that. And so that was the early days of like developing this strong distaste for SDN. And now I know my students use it quite a bit for information. So yeah, I'm trying to find balance.
Yeah. And I would say like, this is one of those things where the pre-med life and regular life lines up, right? Where misinformation in regular life is also a big issue. And reviews and peer reviews, right? And customer reviews are a big part of how people make decisions about what to purchase and where to go and what to do. And yet there's also a lack of like validation in that process, right? Like someone can write a one-star review of a restaurant and totally make it up and it can get posted. And so I think one of the things I have conversations around is, do you know what you're looking for information? And are those forums the best place to look for that information or not? Like there are, you know, when you're looking for a restaurant, to be honest, reading reviews and seeing what people liked and didn't like so that you can make an educated decision about whether something has, you know, dietary restrictions with for you, like that's good. That's a good way of being an educated consumer, and you get information from other people who have been at that restaurant. When you're applying to medical school and you're looking for, okay, what type of student does that medical school like that might be valid, but looking at scores and data that are very easy to make up or easy to inflate or are anecdotal, it may not be a good way to make a decision.
Well, and it's personal. Like how can you, so anyone who gets into med school for their own reason. It has very little to do with your reason for getting into med school. And so looking at why, you know, how it worked out for someone else and saying, oh, well, I'm similar to them or I'm different than them. It should or should not work out for me in the same way is absolutely bizarre in the med school process. It does not work like that. And so I think you're right. Like you have to consume that information differently and knowing what you're looking for when you're going in. Like I have a good example of what I do recommend SDN for. If you are beginning your secondaries, which is a great thing to do close, you know, pretty soon, you can go into the school specific discussions, and most every year, some gung-ho pre-med goes in there and puts all of the secondary prompts as soon as they come out. Now, I trust these people who do this because they're usually accurate. I usually say SDN is way more accurate than someone else's website because the people who do this like the minute they're posted. That I send them in. I tell people, go in, put blinders on, go straight to the school-specific discussions, copy and paste the prompts, and get out of there. Don't look around. Don't go clicking and poking, because what you're going to start to find is, well, they want to know, well, what are my chances at this school? Right? That's why people go in there. Or, you know, yeah, like you said, what are they looking for in a candidate, which is impossible for an applicant to know what a school is looking for. Have you found any other uses for it? I mean, I guess I can think of a couple more, but what do you do with MCAT stuff?
I think with, well, one of the things I do suggest people use, say, Reddit for is the MCAT subreddit actually has a page or a subreddit of its own specifically for materials of like, hey, I already use these. I'm selling them for like $50 or I'm just giving them away. Mm-hmm. And so it's an easy way to get materials for the cheap that are slightly used and just passing it on, because you don't need a brand new set of MCAT materials like books, flashcards, any of that stuff. It's just it's the same content. It's been since like, say, I would say 2016 and on is safe. Because in 2015, mm-hmm. I know that when the books first came out, there was some issues of like knowing exactly what to put. And there was a lot of typos because the books were shoved out in like about 6 months for most of the companies. So, but like anything 2016 and beyond, if you can get it cheap through Reddit, that's a good way to get your materials.
So using it as like a marketplace.
Yeah. Yeah. I use that. The other thing I do that I tell students who are maybe like lonely and studying by themselves and but are social studiers normally, mm-hmm. is there are some Discords on Reddit where people just like get into study, like they don't talk, but they like just join a Discord to study together. And I think that can be really valuable, or like just saying like verbally committing and being like, I'm going to study today, like, and posting it somewhere allows for that little bit of social accountability, which is awesome. And it gives a slight community feel. And I think that that's where the power of a forum can be really great, is kind of just saying like, hey, we're all supporting each other. Unfortunately, there's also a lot of very toxic spaces that are almost anti-supportive, where it's a very competitive space, or there's a lot of, like false information around test scores in particular, like MCAT scores, or like, oh, I'm never going to get good. You know, it's like, there's a lot of anxieties that get posted around like, oh, here's what I did in practice scores, and here's what I did on my real test. And just like applications, MCAT journeys are person specific, and scores by themselves don't tell you anything about that person. Don't tell you, like, cannot be compared to you in your journey. So it's just important, I think, as a best practice, both as a poster and as a reader on these forums, to stay away from the data, actually. Where normally I love data, but the data, when it's posted anonymously without any, you know, validation, can hurt more than it helps. So staying away from those data posts, staying away from score-based posts, and instead focusing more on the community aspect and supporting each other, I think can be a really powerful use of it for good.
Right. It kind of goes back to the purpose of, why are you using it? Mm-hmm. Are you using it to feel good? Are you trying to find information? Or are you using it to sort of validate your own fear and anxiety? And I don't know. I feel like talking to a lot of people, they go there because they're already feeling anxious, and it's mm-hmm. almost like self-harm. It's almost like, I want someone else to make me to confirm that I'm not good enough, and that I don't have this and I don't have that. And it's almost like people are seeking that information, that confirmation that they don't have enough of something. And that's what I hate about it. I hate, it's not really the fact that it exists. It's the way that it's being used, and the fact that there are people willing to invalidate people in that way. You know, I guess we would call them trolls in social media, but somebody who is going to be hateful and negative and basically say, oh yeah, you have a 507 and a 3.3. Like, why would you bother applying? There's no point. Right. That's what I hate about it.
I don't even know if that it's just necessarily individuals doing that, but it's also like the red green chart. Everybody out there probably knows what I'm talking about. It's the MCAT score on one axis, the GPA on the other axis, and it shows like, oh, and if you're in the top right corner, you've got a 93% chance of getting accepted. And like, that's not what that table means at all. And like, that's just taking averages. It's not like representing individuals. And so it doesn't really mean anything of like what your percent chance is. It's one of the things I think is toxic there is like, oh, you have X percent chance of being accepted if you have this MCAT and this GPA. Like who's, right. Huh?
Well, it's one of the reasons why, you know, I jokingly, but not jokingly, like, see, data analysis is so important, not just in the MCAT, but in life, is being able to understand that like historical data is not predictive data, yes, right? Like, yes, what you're seeing with all of that, everything the AAMC posts is historical data, which by definition is not predictive. Like we can say, okay, there's these general buckets and themes and trends, but it's not going to give you a percent chance of getting into schools because of that historic data. And I think like, that's one of the reasons why I harp so much on being good at data analytics through MCAT prep, but also in life, is because I think even something relatively straightforward like that can be misconstrued on the internet and kind of then snowball, and there's an echo chamber, and it's all based on a faulty reasoning of data, which is, you know, something that reoccurs over and over, I think, not just in pre-meds, but in all life.
Oh, yeah.
And the echo chamber is filled with only the most positive and only the most negative as well. Not only, but generally the most positive and negative. Like,
yeah,
one of my biggest pet peeves over the years having been a teacher is student evaluations. And like the data has been shown time and time again about student evals that they're not 100% representative. They're very barely representative of what actually goes on in a class. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes for people's opinions when they're posting about, like, you know, a med school or about their experience with pretty much anything. Or like the dining example you guys were using earlier, is that the people that have the best opinions and the worst opinions are the ones that are generally the loudest and posting the most. The ones that have the balanced opinions, they're going to tell you like both sides of their experience, generally get drowned out in all that other noise. And also, they don't have a proclivity to post things. Most people are going to post if they've got extremely strong feelings one way or the other, are the ones that post. The ones that have the neutral, balanced feelings generally don't post. So you're getting
The people who, and I don't know if it's just these people seek me out or they actually listen to me, and then they turn into these kinds of people. But, you know, I tell them that the most important thing in this process is staying calm and rational, and to some degree happy, because calm, rational, happy people tend to be more successful in this process. If you are frenzied and out of control with your anxiety and you throw yourself into depression because you're constantly looking for reasons why nothing, you know, it's not going to work out. It's not going to work out, because when you present yourself to the schools, they're looking for people who are ready to go into a doctoral level education. And that typically means confident and calm and to some degree happy. So, you know, if you are trying to stay in that state of mind, it would be best to stay away from places that make you feel bad. And so I think those calm, rational people who are not looking to be more anxious are not going to post, because they're not there. They are simply minding their own business, staying in their own lane. When they have a question, they go directly to the source. So I send people directly to med schools to ask questions. If you don't know, if they're still interviewing, ask the school if they're still interviewing, right? If you don't know if this satisfies a letter of rec requirement, ask the school. There is no reason to go ask your peers. And I'm kind of being the negative Nelly here, like, about these two sites. And I know there are good positive things about them. Probably the MCAT world can talk more about that. But from an advisor's point of view, I have found that they just tend to generate more stress than they produce good.
They generate stress in me, and I'm not even in this process anymore. So one of the things that I find to be my role as a, you know, an MCAT coach and educator is to keep up on what people are saying, right? So like, what are the people saying so that I can respond with my students in an appropriate way, or tell them like, hey, you know, don't worry about this or this. So I am on the Reddits, and I get those notifications every morning, and I can't read them first thing in the morning because they cause me stress, and I am not even taking the MCAT. So I can only imagine like a student being in a situation where the first thing they see in the morning is a Reddit notification about someone getting a 524 on their exam, and they did this and this, and you need to be doing this if you get it right, if you want to get this score. Like, gosh, that would be stressful. So I personally do that. I have once a week that I keep my notifications off, and I have once a week where I look at all the recent posts on our pre-med or our MCAT, and I'm just looking at an overview of like, is there any trends or themes that seem to be coming up and getting, you know, upvoted and echo chambered that I should be responding to with my community, right? And kind of protecting them from that so that I'm kind of doing that initial filtering with my community. So I'm only giving them the useful stuff. And if there is a useful post, that's great. And one of the things, so I will give an example of a post that I almost felt a need to respond in writing to, but I have a line where I don't do that. I don't have an account to write with, which I think is a healthy line. But one of them was, and this is for my MCATers, so those who are taking the MCAT, this is very relevant, is you get a noteboard, right? You get a laminated noteboard, and on the noteboard, it says you are not allowed to write in the noteboard until the test begins. Now, the AAMC has come out and said that that means from the moment the tutorial starts, there's a 10-minute tutorial. The AAMC has said this. And yet, on this information from the proctors, what the proctors receive just says when the test begins. So an individual proctor may decide that that means not during the tutorial, during the actual exam, right? And so this Reddit poster found the AAMC information that said, no, you can start writing it during the tutorial. They screenshotted it and they said, hey guys, print this out and bring this into your MCAT so that you can argue with the proctor first thing if they get mad at you about writing during the tutorial. And I just thought that was terrible advice because
yeah, let's get in a fight on MCAT day.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, and I'm like, and so a student of mine sent me this and was like, hey, what do you think about this? Like, should I be mind dumping, you know, the 10 minutes? And so I had to really go to my community and like make a post of my own and say, listen, it is not worth it to get like, you are in the right. You are allowed to write in your noteboard during the tutorial. It is not worth it to get in a fight with the proctor right before your MCAT. Like, it's never worth it. And mind dumping for a critical reasoning exam is statistically shown not to be effective because you don't know what's going to be on the test. And it's just tiring out your brain for 10 minutes without really knowing what you should be writing, right? So there's a lot of reasons not to mind dump, but it was one of those situations where the good news is it created discourse with my students about what was appropriate. The bad news is for every student that I don't work with, there was only upvotes because it was an echo chamber. There was only upvotes and there was only like, yeah, I'm going to do this. Thanks so much. And there wasn't that discussion of like, is this actually the right thing to do at the beginning of your exam to go in and have a fight with your proctor, right? Like,
yeah, let's raise our blood pressure and get upset.
And it's not even, and like, is this even a skill I should be worrying about doing? Right? Like, is this even something that's going to be helpful for my exam? So those are the kinds of things that I worry about because of the way that these forums work. Is that certain posts will get upvoted, and Doug, you can kind of like back me up on the exact algorithm, but certain posts get upvoted, and if a negative comment, like opposing, not negative, but opposing idea comments get downvoted. So even though there may be discourse in there that's like a contrasting point of view, you won't see that in the post because they get downvoted if they're not in agreement with the post. And that's the danger of even like a useful piece of information like that. Like, that was useful, but the way a forum works is all about views, and it's not allowing for that back and forth that I think is real, would be valuable.
Or correction. Yeah, absolutely.
The downvotes do actually emphasize as well, but the problem is like when it's equal up and down, that's what doesn't come through.
Right.
But like if it's a lot of downvotes on a particular comment, then it becomes a pile-on.
Mm-hmm.
And like everybody piles on the negative one, because if one, you know, if 100 people have already downvoted it, like it's easy to downvote. So it's like, again, it's just emphasizing the extreme. It's like the polarizing effect of social media, where you get all this, the either end, but never the middle.
Yeah. So I will say, I'll go ahead and I'll give a contrasting point of view, right? So that we show that how to do this is that, Well, it's like, it's good to do both. One value that I have used Reddit for is when I have a very specific question that cannot be answered by going to the source, right? So for example, I have curly hair. I wanted to find a hairdresser in Salt Lake City that I felt comfortable going to with my hair. Instead of searching Reddit, because that is, you know, you don't know who posted or why. I had my husband, because I don't have an account, I had him post, hey, we're looking for a curly hair. This is what exactly what we're looking for. Do you have any recommendations and why? And what was cool is I got a bunch of comments, and then I was able to go and like research on my own, but I had a list to work off of. So a good example here would be for MCAT prep. If you're like, hey, I'm in this area, I would like an in-person tutor. Does anybody have recommendations? And you can create that post yourself and be very specific about what you're looking for. And then people can comment, you can choose whether or not to verify their comments or, oh, that's not really relevant for what I'm looking for. So creating your own post for a very specific thing that's not about going to a source like a medical school, I think is a good use of like using your peers for support.
Yeah, I can imagine something like that where, let's say you are very interested in schools that have a particular public health track or a public health course, and you say, you know, I'm really interested in schools that focus on public health through their medical school curriculum. Can, you know, based on the research you've done, can you throw out some school names and let other people who've already done that research help you out with that?
Exactly. Right. Where it's, you're not just like reading passively random posts that happen to show up in that thread. You're looking for a piece of information and then allowing your peer group to provide you with options to then do more research on, right? So that's what I like. Doug, I wanted to ask you your opinion, because I have mixed opinions on this, about the MCAT post-test date threads, right? Where people post about their experience after like the March 22nd date or something like that. Like, what are your opinions on those?
Not great. I would say there's two things I think that happen on those mostly is, number one, you got people talking about their particular experience, but their particular experience isn't the same as anybody else's, because it's pretty well established that you could be at the same testing center with somebody else on the same day and not get the same MCAT questions, same passages. So like what your experience is going to be very different than my experience, because you're not getting the same test. That's why when the internet goes down, you're done with your MCAT. Like, you've got to wait until the internet comes back up, because it's going from a test bank. The second thing is, you've got to be very mindful. Like, if you say the wrong thing, or if you sneak even a peek at one of the questions, AMC is a very well-known litigious organization, and they will, and they have come after people and done cease and desists. And if the people continue to post or undelete posts or whatever, they will take them to court, and you know, it's just not worth it. It's not worth that danger. And so, I mean, I don't think it benefits anybody to lament how your test day went or say, oh, it was great or whatever necessarily, especially when you run the risk of being letting out secrets, that because you signed an NDA when you start that test, like you agree to not say a word about anything you saw on that test. So
yeah,
I'd say just don't participate in those threads, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, they are very specific with their language too, right? Where they're like, you can talk about it as long as it's general, right? Like you could say like, wow, there seemed to be a lot of gen chem on this exam, right? But saying like there was a radioactivity question on number 37 and it had a graph, it's very much not. So like, where is that line? To Doug's point, like why risk it? Like, I do always like my students to write down what they thought for themselves, right? In their own little journal, so that they can compare it to their actual scores. But posting on a public forum, you know, they can find you, right? And I don't know, Joanne, if this happens with students on the like med school application side, but it definitely happens on MCAT, where like the AAMC will find out these students and say, you know, you have violated the NDA and, you know, we're going to either go to court or we're going, you know, it'll be known in your application that you did this, right? So is there a similar situation with med schools?
There is. Well, there is the interview feedback page. And on the interview feedback page, on many of them, people do post the interview questions that they were given. And so med schools change the interview questions from year to year. But a lot of people will actually post, you know, will actually say, like, we're not supposed to be telling you here, which is really ethical of them. Other people ignore that, just continue to post the questions, but they're helpful. I'm not gonna lie. Like, I go there and look at the questions. It helps me give an idea of like what the school cares about. It doesn't mean they're gonna use those exact questions, but it does give me an idea of like, okay, they seem to focus more on this or that. So yeah, there is, I'm not aware of any schools that actually have followed up with anybody and tracked them down or anything like that. I'm sure it has happened in the history of time. But
I think the benefit of the interview page is the interview response pages is like finding out what the structure of the interview is, not necessarily mm-hmm. with questions, but is it an MMI? Is it 5 minutes or 2 minutes, 5 minutes? Is it 1 minute, 6 minutes, whatever?
Yeah, I can't find that info on that page. I always have to send people to find that information. I'm sure there's some database out there that shows all of that. Somebody's probably put an Excel sheet together. Maybe I should do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So even we need to go and find our own sources, right? So
right.
I think our kind of general vibe is that most of the time posting personal information about your experience is not usually worth it, right? Especially for MCAT, but also for pre-med. Like, even if you like to post about other things, your pre-med experience really is yours. Yeah. And mm-hmm. there can be some problems with posting. And then in terms of receiving information, making sure you know what you're looking for and why. And if it causes you stress and anxiety to go onto these forums, don't go onto the forums, right? Don't cause yourself more stress than this system and this process already does. And like, that's why we're here, right? So if you do have questions that you can't find the answers to, like, look out for people like us, right? Like Joanne on the pre-med side, me and Doug on the MCAT side, like, we've been doing this for years. And even if we don't know the answer, we can probably point you in a direction that will get you the answer. So finding sources that will have that conversation with you, I think, is also important.
Yeah. So, and like I say to all my students, is that, like, when you're going to start studying for the MCAT or getting ready to do your application, just delete the social media apps from your phone.
Yeah.
Out of sight, out of mind. If you need to, you can always go on your web browser, because they all are also on the browsers. But like, if it's not right there on the phone, you're less likely to doom scroll through all the dank memes and things that are in these forums, and, you know, yep. making yourself feel worse and worse and worse about things. So just delete the apps for the time you're doing the studying, and it makes it less present and in your face.
Yep. Replace the TikTok icon with the amino acid quiz icon, and then you're all good to go. Awesome, guys. Well, I'm Amanda Brehm from The Brehm Method. You can find me at brehmmethod.com and on YouTube at @brehmmethod.
I am Joanne Snapp at My Honest Advisor. I'm on Instagram and YouTube.
And I'm Doug McLemore with Icosa Prep, and you can find me at icosaprep.com.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.